Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome, one and all, to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thank you for being here on yet another episode. I got a great guest in store, and if you're watching on Facebook, you kind of see him waiting in the wings, but not quite yet. We're going to make sure we hit a couple things first, like how do you get in contact with the show? Don't forget, you can email me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. I will be watching along with this live show, so you can chat comments as well on Facebook. Then the sponsors, always got to remember our sponsors. They are amazing. They help this show get off and running and been a part of some major events that this show is also a part of, like Giving Tuesday, which we'll talk about later on a later segment of this show. So we want to thank Perkin Elmer, Dyne Therapeutics, and Fulcrum Therapeutics for being our sponsors for our show. We had on, I think about, it's been maybe about two episodes back, and we talked about, you know, a younger generation, Gen Z in particular, as well as early onset group that has been started with FSHD Society. And those are exciting things. It's a generation of people that, to be honest with you, we haven't really talked enough about. And we have another representation of that group today. So we are excited to bring in, as he's waiting patiently there, Mr. Sam Ray. Sam, welcome. Thanks for being here and taking some time to talk with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, I always like to start, you know, with who is this person, right? That's probably what a lot of listeners and people watching are like, okay, we know his name and we know he looks like a young guy. So why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself and we can start there.
So I'm Sam Ray. I live in Tucson, Arizona. I'm 16 years old, and I go to a Vail high school. I was diagnosed at age 6, and I've been living with infantile onset FSHD.
So what's your earliest recollection of FSHD? You know, at 6 years old, and that's pretty young for me. That would be 40 years ago for me, man. So, you know, I don't remember much at six. What do you remember, if anything, you know, those first early years coping with the disease?
So what I remember is, so FSHD, it's progressive. So what my abilities would be at age 6 would be different than what I can do now. Mm-hmm. So when I was 6 years old, I noticed that obviously running around, I was a little bit slower. Mm. And that mainly at six, that was the biggest thing, was just getting around was a little bit difficult. I think maybe at that time, I kind of walked a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Almost sort of a limp in a way. Mm-hmm. So that's the only thing I could that I can remember being six. And then as the years progressed, there were more noticeable changes in my physical ability and my first use of AFO leg braces. SSHD has leg dropped in one foot. So on my right foot, my foot kind of hung down. You know, it's obvious that obvious you could trip over that. Mm-hmm. So we put a brace on that to stop it. And then on my left foot, we put another brace on that one to kind of help stabilize my feet and help assist with walking. And another thing I forgot to mention too, there is hearing loss, and that kind of comes with the disease. I think it's either you get hearing or vision, mm-hmm. but what I've seen personally is a lot of hearing loss. Yeah. Specifically, like 1 year. Okay. You have a little bit of tone deafness, just a little bit. But I can't remember that affecting me a whole lot, except having to wear like a hearing aid when I was younger. So we got the leg braces, and then I had my first surgery when I was in fifth grade on that left
Wow.
foot, because it was rolling to a point where it was rubbing so hard up against that braces, causing calluses and pain. So that first surgery, after that was when I saw a major stop or a jump in my progression. So after that surgery, there's obviously a lot of downtime, not being able to use that leg. And the way SSHD works, that it's completely asymmetrical. The left side of my body is significantly stronger than the right side of my body. So I had a cast on my left foot.
Okay.
Meaning I had to use my right leg for a lot of stuff, which was hard. And that was my first use of a wheelchair. And it was just for the surgery, because I didn't have the upper body strength to use crutches. So they gave me a wheelchair, but after that, I became dependent on a walker everywhere I went. And kind of how I remember things, that after each surgery that I've had, there was a major loss of strength. So I was dependent on the walker up to, it's a little dull to me, but either sixth grade or the beginning of seventh, I had a second surgery on the same foot. And after that, I lost the leg braces. Didn't have to use them anymore. Mainly because I wasn't walking as much. And I just kind of had like a soft, kind of like a sport ankle brace, just sort of on that right foot or left foot for a little bit. But after that, I had to use a small power chair that someone was nice enough to give as a donation for free. It was a small power chair that I would
Oh, nice.
use for longer distances and kind of going around school. And because I realized I get fatigued very easily. And then from then on, the wheelchair just became a little bit more and more dependent. So throughout middle school, the use of the chair became a lot more evident. Up until about eighth grade, when I was using the small chair for around school and a bigger one for like going on errands and longer distances. Because it was small, it wasn't very good at like rough terrain or anything. So then I became dependent on that big power chair. And that's basically now where
That's
I
where you're at
am on
now.
terms of like walking. But then after that, there's a well, recently, I'm not sure if we want to talk about it right now, but I did have a big recent surgery.
Oh.
If you'd like me to get into that or save that for
Well,
later.
yeah, no, I think that's a good time to add that in, because it definitely sounds like this is something you're battling. And if you were, diagnosed at six, you're 16 now. That's only a 10-year window. You've had some big changes, right?
Yeah,
Over
it's
this
the
amount of
way
time.
it changes is so, it's so unpredictable and it's so weird. Like I remember just one day I was trying to do something in real life, my thumbs wouldn't come up. Like I was trying to do like a thumbs up or something
Yeah.
or move it in a way, and it's like it just didn't move anymore. It just didn't
Huh.
want to come up. And that's sort of the weirdest thing about this disease, is that you don't know what's gonna happen next. What's in the, what's gonna happen, the next day. And
Yeah.
it's so random. And with the asymmetricness of it, with still my left side being way stronger than my right.
Yeah, that it is surprising to me, because you hear people that talk about how the disease is slow. It's a slow progression. It slowly, attacks. But for me, it sounds like from what you're talking about, is it's actually faster. I mean, is that accurate?
Yeah, so infantile onset is way more severe. So you see people with SSH, they don't see their symptoms until
Well, like,
their 40s, probably, if that's right.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
So that's when they start seeing their symptoms. But gosh, right out the womb, you can kind of tell what sort of the most prominent thing that came first was my facial weakness. That's all that came first. That with the hearing loss. At first, I thought I had like some sort of fluid in my ear. Maybe that was causing some sort of hearing loss. So they thought they fixed that, and they're like, "You're good to go." And then for my kindergarten screening, like, "No, you need a hearing aid in this ear." And also in preschool, they would notice some weird, my face. And when my mom was in the Air Force, and she would come down to, and we moved back to Arizona, where I live now, when I was 2 years old. And I remember hearing stories from my family, like, "What's wrong with your son? He doesn't smile. He's so sad all the time." I'm like, "No, he's happy. I know when he's happy." But they're like, "He doesn't smile, but." And I was in, so that was the earliest case was, and I do remember a story that the first main thing with the facial weakness was I couldn't raise my eyebrows.
So you
So that was
know
the first thing.
that you probably
Uh, I, I
remember.
was with, yeah, I was with my dad, and then we took me to an orthopedic, like a face doctor, for lack of a better word. And they're like, "He might have SSH." And they're like, "Can you raise his eyebrows?" And they're like, "Of course he can raise his eyebrows." And they go, "Do it." And I'll just sit there like, "No, I can't." Little 3-year-old, 4-year-old me, like, "Can't raise my eyebrows." Whatever. And they're like, "Huh." And then up until when I was 6 years old, when I got the blood work done, and it was actual when they found the deletion and all that. And they're like, "Yeah, it's muscular dystrophy, it's FSH."
So at that point, you get that kind of news. That's not good news, obviously, but it did at least answer some questions. So as you've gotten older, I mean, can you see now in perspective that it was that something that was tough to deal with, or was there some type of comfort? At least you knew what it was.
I think just the way it progressed, you didn't notice. Because, well, first thing, 6 years old, you don't know a whole lot, about how bodies work and all that. But also, just I realized, like, oh, just a little slow. And then you kind of notice, like, no, this is how. And then once you get older, say maybe second grade, third grade, when I got the AFOs, that's when I sort of started understanding, like, okay, there's something wrong. I'm not the same. Why can't I keep up? Why am I getting so tired? Why am I falling all the time? I see people like they're running all the time and all this and that. I'm like, why can't I do that? That's not. And that's sort of when I started noticing, like, oh, it's not normal. And but being in that, my classmates and stuff, I went to a small school. And they were always very like understanding, like if we're playing tag, like run a little slower or something like that for them. So I think even them seeing that there was something up with the physical ability. So I think just the way it progressed made it so subtle, and then it doesn't ever really hit you until you start thinking about it, Say you just kind of think like, wow, this is how this happened, I'm this, and this is my life or whatever. And you kind of start thinking, but in my perspective, just the way it progressed, I keep saying it was just subtle, but then it would get drastic, but even those changes would be subtle. Like I thought when I was using the walker, I thought it was just for rehab, you know. I was going for PT and all that, you know, to get my leg up to strength. But that walker, it never went away. You know, that's just kind of how it was. So even with drastic changes, there was still stuff you don't really notice. You have to actually like think about it.
Until maybe you look back and see where you are and where you've come, and then you're going, oh man, okay, there's been some.
Oh, this, yeah, just when you get a better understanding, and you can get that from a very young age. It's hard for me to remember what my initial thoughts were so long ago, but I just remember just being like, this is it. And then I was able to understand, you know, how to explain it, how it works. And I remember being able to do that from a very young age.
So how about now being a teenager offers different challenges? I mean, just as a run of the mill average teenager, you know, I mean, there's different things going on in your life, you know, and different goals and different pressures, and you know, high school is tougher than middle school or grade school, etc. So, you know, for any average teenager, there's always adjustments that can be difficult. But then to add this on top of it, how do you cope with dealing with FSHD and being a high schooler?
Oh no, and I honestly can't say if I have. So coming back to the surgeries, last year in August, I had spinal fusion surgery. So I got two metal rods attached to my spine, because with the disease comes scoliosis and lordosis. Well, it turns out I got the package deal. I got all of it together
Oh,
to the
jeez.
point where it was becoming life-threatening to a point where I felt pressure on my chest, like my heart and my lungs.
Really? Okay.
So they're like, and what I heard, and this was probably the most upsetting part of getting a surgery, was being told that you might, you know, they were saying the doctors and all that, like you might need back surgery, but not until probably you're 20. And
Wow.
then come I'm 14, I'm 16 now, come 14, 15, 15, and then you're just like, no, you have to get it now, and there's no other option. Like you would look and search, you know, what can you do? What's different? What other surgeries out there? Like, no, this is what you need to do. And that's probably the hardest thing in my life experience was that back surgery. Because it's such an invasive, long recovery. I mean, I was bedridden for months.
Oh,
You
man.
know, my strength that I had, it was all completely gone. I was down to 75 pounds. You know,
Holy
everything
smokes.
that I had before and the way I moved and the way I functioned, all of it changed. Because a lot of things that you have to do with FSH, your body kind of learns how to compensate. You know, what can you do differently to achieve this motion?
You
So,
adapt,
and I
right?
would use my back a lot. And I know that now, it being not able to move at all, my back is completely stiff. So, just trying to relearn a bunch of stuff. And even something that I don't even think about. Like now, when I grab things, it's my hand right here. I always grab it with the other. I'll never remember telling myself to grab with this hand. It just does it.
Just does it,
You
right?
know?
You just go for it, right?
Just go for it. Like, I need to pick up this pen, but and then I get it, you know. You don't think about it.
No,
But
it's your body's way, right? Or your mind's way, more importantly, of adapting. I need to get this done. I'll adapt to do it, you know, until you can't, and then you figure out another way.
And I think that's a big part of coping is just figuring out different ways to do things. But still, with the biggest problem was that back surgery. Because a lot of the strength I had, I lost it, but I'm getting it back through extensive physical therapy. once a
That's a
week.
long road.
So I started out doing therapy online, but the pain was just sort of intolerable. Like I couldn't sit for very long and it started hurting. So the pain was intolerable to a point where I couldn't work with my physical therapist online and all that. How am I supposed to focus on doing on exercising
Yeah, when you're in all that pain, right?
when I got like pain, up and down my back and everywhere? So we switched over to aquatic therapy. So it was in a pool. And the shift to the pool was also drastic because you got in the pool and everything stretches out. But it helped a lot. And something with a lot of the coping is just knowing that I see myself in worse situations, but I've always seen myself come out better from them. Just sort of, maybe not in a physical way, but just sort of like, I'm 103 pounds now, which is still pretty light, but better compared to 75.
That's true.
So,
It's better, right?
yeah, so, you can't snap me in half anymore, get thrown away. So I think just part of the coping is just seeing, getting better and noticing. And there are times when it kind of hits you hard, if you're in a bad mood and you just kind of think about you had a bad day and just sort of seeing yourself, you're down low and like you find a way to get out of it. So with the coping, I don't really do any practice if I don't tell myself it's gonna get better. Cause in the long run, who knows what's gonna happen. I don't know. I can't tell myself this is great, this is fine.
No,
I
you're not
can't
gonna
just sit
be,
there,
you're not gonna be Pollyanna positive making up some
Yeah,
feelings.
like oh look, the sun's out today. No. You
Just figure it out.
go with it and you just kind of get out of. When you have something like a disease for so long, you've gotten used to just coping in different ways and just knowing like this is my life, but it's okay. It's okay. And it and I am seeing changes. I am way stronger than I was a year ago.
So you're making progress, and that's what you got to feed off of. Now, you said you're okay, so you're 16 years old, and right away people will go, okay, 16-year-old, you start to drive. So are you at that stage now? I mean, are you attempting to get your driver's license?
I am, yeah. I have my permit. I have taken the written test. It's just trying to get the van and the licenses for it. Because not every car has like a wheelchair ramp in it, or hand controls
Yep, you got to
or
get it
whatever.
custom, right? You got to
So,
get it made with those things or added, right?
So not everyone knows how to drive that kind of vehicle. So you have to take a special course, but a special driving course. And it's really, really extensive. So the state of Arizona requires 30 hours for anyone else. And I could learn in 30 hours, but I think the most, for most people, you don't learn that quick to drive a car, for 30 hours, it takes some practice and
Take some time.
learning. So thinking, what if it doesn't take me 30 hours? And what it works out with those lessons and everything, it could cost up to $1,000
Holy cow.
just to learn how to drive, just the lessons.
That's insane.
No, that's how much it costs per hour, I think. Something along those lines. Where it's just
That's ridiculous.
stupidly crazy. Where at the end, you're paying about $5,000 just for the lessons, whatever. And it's confusing. It's easy to get convoluted in it. So I don't remember the stats about it.
But
So
if
just the lessons alone are
yeah.
really extensive. And then you come to the van, which that's about. You're looking at 90,000.
Oh man. Seriously?
You're looking at 90,000 for a van, yeah. depending on what you need, that's the highest.
Jeez.
Like, I can get a nice sports car if I want to. Not a minivan,
right,
you know?
Right.
And just seeing that anyone else, you know, you can borrow your parents' car, hop in a friend's car. You can carpool or anything. I can't do that.
No.
But they, and nobody will help pay for it.
That seems like this is, okay, so the way I see it, what I'm, if I'm hearing you correctly, is because it's so expensive, right? The vehicle's going to be that much. This is a lot more expensive than the average person to just get their license, get the lessons in, whatever, driving time in, get the generic car, and off you go. So you have to go through more expense, more hurdles. Obviously, the customization stuff, of course, we all expect that. But to have it be that much of a negative impact just to get a driver's license, I mean, that seems like that the rules or the law, whatever, isn't quite designed properly for someone your age trying to get their license.
No, it's not really made for disabled people.
No.
And there are programs out there to help, like vocational rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm enrolled in it trying to get a job and, in a career field. And they want me to, so I take a kind of a night class after school program where I'll get my, at the end of all of it, I'll have my drone license and my pilot's license at the end of it for any high schooler.
Really?
Part of the Tucson program called JTED. Yeah.
JTED. So you're learning how to fly a drone, and it sounds like this is not just like some little drone we get from like Walmart. No, this is like some high-end stuff, right?
Yeah. To be able to fly drones commercially, you have to have a special license.
Okay.
Not anyone can take a drone and then get a job. You have to have a special license that comes with it.
Got it.
Because there's FAA rules and regulations that you have to abide by. And
that makes sense.
Study for your license stuff. So Voc Rehab wants me to do this program.
Okay.
But they're not helping me get there. We've gone to court over this, actually. There's a court case where somewhere in the policy it states that you can help pay for transportation, at least just a training, you know?
Yeah.
But they're still denying it.
Hmm.
So they're denying helping to pay for a vehicle.
Yeah.
And like, well, he can take Sunvan. I live in a neighborhood kind of on the outskirts of Tucson-ish little suburb area called Vail. And I'm kind of plonked out in the middle of a desert. Okay. Sunvan doesn't come out all the way to my house. Mm-hmm. You know, that's more for closer to the city. And they're like, well, maybe your parents can drive you everywhere.
Hmm.
And it's like, well, my parents need to work. And
so let's, you know, inconvenience you and your parents instead of doing what's right and aiding you into getting all this handled.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
So we've contacted what's the whole court case? The director of DES. This is what we did. I'm not sure what DES stands for, but the director of DES, with our denial, we lost the court case.
Hmm.
So with our denial, the DES also stated it's not Sam's ability or disability, it's his parents' schedule.
Oh my gosh, but you're the person, is it because you're just a minor and you're disabled? Is that the issue? Because if you were an adult, you wouldn't be relying on your parents to take you somewhere.
I think that's what they expect.
Wow.
Is that, you know, they're like, you have resources, just use them. You know, then they just want my mom and my stepdad to drive me everywhere.
Yeah.
And my dad or, you know, family members just to haul me around everywhere I need to go to my JTED program. for a job that's landing, but they won't, and there's still not like they're not paying for it.
So you have this kind of battle with, I think you said it with DES, and that didn't work out in your favor. Trying to get these classes here for through JTED, so you're getting your commercial drone license, which is awesome. And I mean, that's a nice career path for someone such as yourself. Do you enjoy doing the drone work so far?
I do have a little, I have a drone and I do enjoy flying it, but I'm also a big aircraft fanatic, especially like historical military, because both my parents were Air Force.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
So, I've always been interested in airplanes and aircraft. So I saw that like, oh, do this, I'll do this program and get my drone license. That could be a cool career because you get all your certifications at the end of it, all paid for. And then you can get employed right out of high school for about 38,000.
Really?
Which is really good
Yeah, that's
for,
not too
you
bad.
can
Yeah. That's
for surveying for whoever needs it.
right.
But it's also, you stay in this class, you also get your private pilots.
Wow.
So that's a big focus that we're doing right now, because private pilot is one of the, it's the longest license to get besides than commercial, like flying airliners. So private pilot is a long process to get. So it's cool that we get to do it as a class. And then I can go into, I'm set on drones right now, but if I want to, I could do air traffic control or work with FAA or something like that too, with all the, FAA certifications and all
Yeah.
of
Yeah, there's other means to work within that
that.
career path, so to speak, than just flying in general, you're saying.
Yeah, it's a really good resource, and I'm glad to be able to have that opportunity.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
flying drones, it's just like having a controller in your hand. It's not that physically demanding.
Right.
You just have to have dexterity. So,
That's
and my
good.
dexterity isn't affected. So, flying drones isn't that hard for me.
Well, it's really important that you're finding some type of niche now early on so that path is set. It's kind of like one less stress to deal with. It is because those that, have the late onset, like you mentioned, when they're more in their 40s or something, they've already had some type of career, and then they got a shift, I always think it's important for any young person, but I think especially with someone that has FSHD or a disability, like if you can find the niche, the path in your career that fits your life and you really enjoy it early on, I think that's a huge win.
And it also accounts for all the hobbies that I lost due to the disease. I used to, so very, very young, I played soccer. I did baseball 1 year and that didn't go very well.
Nice. Oh,
But I did play
good.
soccer for a little bit and
Yeah.
was active. And then I couldn't do that anymore, but I kind of turned to music. Like my brother, he plays guitar and stuff like that. And it's had a heavy influence of music in my family, so I'm like, I'll take that out. So I started learning guitar. I got lessons for that, but I kind of dropped it to learn the drums.
Yeah.
So I had an electronic drum set, and I actually became really decent at it. Like
Wow.
I don't need it, but I became good at it.
Yeah.
But then, kind of like how I was saying with the thumb thing, I just, so I moved from, I was in a small town in Arizona called Wilcox, and then I moved to Tucson. And so I remember playing the drums, and then probably one of the times I seen myself get so frustrated with the disease was I was playing and I was having a hard time. I ended up just snapping my drumstick, out of frustration.
Yeah.
That's why one of the times, you just get frustrated, like you're telling your body to do something, but it won't do what you're telling it.
Yeah, it's like a
But
disconnect.
But, I was able to get over that and kept playing and kind of found my limit and a style of playing, I guess you could say. That was enjoyable for me. I was no Neil Peart, but I was a, I
Nice.
enjoyed
Good reference. Nice.
it.
Nice. Nice.
But I enjoyed it. But and then I tore down my drum set, boxed it all up, and then we moved to Tucson and got it. I was missing a part from it. I think it got lost in the move or something. So I didn't play it at all, really. And then I bought a part for it, got it, went to go play, and couldn't do it. It was just random. And I, tried to make my arm move. It just wouldn't respond like it used to. Coming back to the randomness of it.
Sure. Yeah, where it was good
So
one
I
moment.
ended up selling the drum kit. And, I was kind of out of hobbies for a little bit. I tried doing, well, I can't say that. I still pursue music. I do like, I picked up the audio engineering
Okay.
sort of stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, like audio engineering and production, music production. And my high school actually does offer one of the electives is audio engineering. So I'm enrolled in that. That's my initial plan. I was going to go into audio engineering or be a music producer.
Yeah.
But then I don't really remember what happened. But then I shifted my focus to the drone. So the doing the drone stuff, gives me hobbies again.
Right, it gives you an interest. Yeah.
So, just an interest to get into
Yeah.
when you've had, everything that you enjoyed doing, just you couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah,
And I think that's
it's
also
tough.
a big part of the code thing is just finding something to do.
Now, going back to the issues with the driver's license, did you get a news like network to try to help you out in that? Did you mention?
Yeah, the one of the local Tucson radio news stations, TV news stations. I don't remember exactly how they heard about it, but we had them like writing a ton of letters, throwing stuff out, talking to people like, hey, someone who could help. And we ended up getting hooked up with one of the main reporters. So and then they sent a camera guy over, and we got the interview and whatever, and then it aired. And so about the entire driver's license
Yeah,
problem.
fiasco.
Yeah. Explaining it better than I ever could. Just, what's happening and what I need.
What kind of response did you get from the people once that aired? Did you get some public outcry?
Well, the weirdest thing was it aired one night, and then I went to high school the next day, went to my school, and I got on, and my bus driver was like, "You were on the news." Like, I saw you. I'm like, "Oh, yeah." And I, on the bus ride to school, I was telling them about the entire thing. We were talking about it. And just throughout the entire high school day, a lot of like staff and teachers kept like, hey, you're on the news. You were on the news. And then in like sixth period class, one of the a staff member told my teacher in that period, like, Sam was on the news. And I kind of told my teacher that, like, oh yeah. Like, you cool if we play it, if we project it on the board and we can all watch it.
Wow, nice.
So I'm like, oh, okay. So instead of learning about, history, we
Yeah.
spent about 30 minutes talking about
That's good.
the entire driver's licensing. And I actually do see that, just seeing how much people recognize me from that at that school. And of course, talk was going around it, throughout the staff. And just seeing that this reached a lot of people just from people seeing it. So we're hoping they like, just doing whatever we can. Hopefully the right person will see it and they can help out.
That's a good idea. Maybe this will help. I don't know. I hope it does. I hope something does, because I think you need to get your driver's license. You need a little assistance here. So anybody that can help Sam out here with his driver's license issues and the cost, for God's sake, the ridiculous nature of this would be great. Now, you're definitely, throughout this so far, you're talking a lot about, you know, adapting, adjusting, even like changing your interests, and you keep busy, keep your mind busy in positive things. The other thing I wanted to touch on was the Gen Z group. I know we have had like Heloise Hoffman on, Lexi Pappas in the past, but I think it was Heloise Hoffman talked about it, even on Giving Tuesday Radiothon that we just had about a week ago, and talking about that group, that Gen Z of FSHD group. What can you, talk from your perspective of how that kind of got started, your involvement, maybe mention a little bit about the Instagram account?
So the meeting that I joined was like the first ever. So a lot of the stuff was just kind of going around, and we each were talking, giving our story of our, what happened with us with FSHD. So basically a lot of getting to know each other. And one thing that I noticed, that a lot of stuff that I was thinking about, like with the asymmetricness, but the thing asymmetric, although like, is this a common thing? Because I have heard it's asymmetric. Turns out everyone brought that up. Everyone's left side is stronger than the right side.
That's wild.
So it was just cool seeing a lot of people and being able to talk, and a lot of people just had the same exact experiences, finding new hobbies. I think Heloise was saying she rode horses.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Couldn't do that. And then, just help people shift their focus similar to how I did it.
Yeah.
And finding that strong group of the people who were active in that meeting all had a ton in common in regards to the disease. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of stuff with like all of us. Mm-hmm. So each person was at a different stage, if you want to put it that way, of progression.
Yeah.
Some people was a little less noticeable. Some people it was really noticeable. Mm-hmm. Kind of in between, maybe. Heloise and Lexi, seeing them at first, like, these must be just people in charge, the meeting, just making sure how it's going, just running it. Turns out both of them had SSH. I would have never thought that, until they mentioned it.
Yeah.
Well, each person was at a different type of progression, but we could all relate on something.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really interesting to be a part of. Mm-hmm. Like, I've gone to the Muscular Dystrophy Association's summer camp.
Yeah.
I have a lot of fun there. Mm-hmm. But the FSHD, the way the infantile onset and even the normal onset that affects later,
yeah,
it's very rare. It's a very, very rare disease. So at that summer camp, I met only like one other person with infantile onset.
Wow.
And other than that, you'd see a lot of Duchenne and MS and stuff like that, other types of muscular dystrophy. So, there wasn't a whole lot of you could relate with.
Yeah.
Because each part of the disease is so different in each way.
Right.
Of how it affects. Like I said, I saw people there, like, I didn't know you had muscular dystrophy, walking around, and then you kind of notice, like, oh, they got a little bit of a limp, they're a little slow, but it was different than what I had.
Yeah.
So it wasn't sort of that sense of just everyone there, you have a sense of we're all the same, but and everyone gets along great. It's a great place to be at. And I really enjoyed it, but it was hard finding people you could like really, really relate to.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a just something really neat to see with that Gen Z. And we hosted, so how I found out, we hosted a walk and roll. And then someone, gosh, I forgot her name, a terrible name, but told me about the Instagram account.
Okay.
So I went ahead and followed them. And you can find them at Gen Z of SSHD. Okay. And then I got contacts with Helly's and also with other people looking over the SSHD society. And then we all had that meeting.
Nice. Yeah, I think it's been really well received, as you mentioned. Very important to have it going. So I'm really proud of all of you guys for doing that, stepping up, being a part of it, organizing it, whatever that is able to give to that part of our community. I think it's just huge. I mean, it's just massively valuable. We don't want to leave any stone unturned, in my opinion, if it's early onset, Gen Z, and so on. Now, I know there's a woman on wellness group for FSHD as well. So it's branching out into all little corners of this disease. And I think it's a great goal to not leave anybody, you know, untouched by this community. You know, if you need the help, there's ways to get it that fit where you are in your life or who you are. So thanks for being a part of it. And thanks for plugging it today. Before we let you go, last question for you, Sam. If there's someone that happens to be listening to this, you know, either via Spotify or wherever we have it for podcasts, or if they're just watching it for the first time, maybe on YouTube or whatnot, and they come across your story and they're dealing with just being diagnosed, even despite maybe even the age, what kind of advice would you give to that person listening?
I mean, it's cliche, but don't give up. You know, there's a lot of things you can do to still be active. It is life changing. It's completely life altering. Mm-hmm. You know, like some things you could do before, it may never be the same again.
Right.
But it's how you live with it, how you deal with it. Anything that you can do to kind of sweep it into the closet, you know, and walk it there. You know, just to, like, don't think it's, although it is life altering, it's life ending. It's not. So it's just try to find your interest, your passions, whatever keeps you going, because if it keeps you going, it keeps you going. And, you know, SSHD won't affect that. You know, I with everything I've been through, you know, all my hobbies just taken away.
Yeah.
All of it, I found ways to do it again. So.
That's great. That's great advice. That's great advice, though. I mean, it has to be that exacting, and it can't be that simple. You got to find your passion. Keep going. Don't give up. It might be cliche, but it does work, you know, if you buy in, if you believe it.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, thanks, Sam, for joining us, spending some time with us. This was awesome to hear from you, finally. I'm glad we got to connect. People can find the Gen Z for FSHD on Instagram, follow there. They can also, if they want to contact you, they can do that through the Arizona chapter. Is that right, Sam?
Yes, they can. Me and my mom are in charge of the Arizona chapter.
Perfect. So if you need to get a hold of Sam, maybe looking for some advice, reach out to him that way. So thanks again, Sam. Take care, and we really appreciate your time.
Awesome. See you later, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So that is Sam Ray. He is an amazing personality. He has done so much for the community, and it's like exactly what I think people need. I think that is, in essence, right, how we move through our life. We have to get through it. We can't give up. Great advice. And this guy is 16 years old. And some might say, man, he got dealt a bad hand. And I don't think he sees it that way. I think he just sees, this is me. This is what I do. So let's take a quick break and get a little sponsor time in here. This is from Dyne Therapeutics. I listen to the FSHD Society radio show. We'll talk a little more on the other side of the break. You're listening to the FSHD Society radio show. FSHD Radio is sponsored by Dyne Therapeutics, a muscle disease company focused on advancing innovative, life-transforming therapeutics for people living with genetically driven diseases. Dyne is developing a broad portfolio of therapies for muscle diseases, including programs in facioscapulohumeral muscular dystrophy, myotonic dystrophy type 1, and Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. Utilizing its proprietary Force platform, Dyne is developing modern oligonucleotide therapeutic candidates designed to overcome limitations in delivery to muscle. For more information, please visit dyne-tx.com and follow Dyne on LinkedIn and Twitter. Welcome back to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. We had a great conversation with Sam Ray out of the Arizona area. Him and his mom run the Arizona chapter. They've done walk and rolls, and he's also part of the Gen Z for FSHD. And we talked to him a lot about certain hurdles and things that he's having to take on at a very young age. He's had infantile onset muscular dystrophy he's had to deal with since he was 6 when he was diagnosed, and he's 16 now. Adjusts, adapts, moves forward. His advice, don't give up. He says it's cliche. I suppose maybe it is. Maybe it is. But it's still good advice. And from coming from someone that, in my opinion, has such a great perspective on life at such a young age, even to the point where he has amazing direction of where he's going to go or thriving to go. Being a drone pilot is not a joke. I mean, that's pretty serious business. And the fact that he can also get his pilot's license on top of it is also a great accomplishment. So, and that's his goals, and still going through high school and then tackling the driver's license thing. And I'll tell you right now, if the cost is that insane and there's actually a newsreel out there, I'm going to watch it. I hope you guys do too and find it. And if there is any connection any of you out there have to help Sam Ray get that driver's license with ease, if it's helping with the cost or something like that, whatever he needs, please reach out to him. You can do that through the Arizona chapter. So that's something to think about for sure. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about the fun we had at the Giving Tuesday event and some events coming up, and then we'll close up shop. You're listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Today's FSHD Society Radio Show is sponsored by Fulcrum Therapeutics. Fulcrum is a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, advancing new medicines that target the root cause of genetically defined rare diseases such as FSHD and sickle cell disease. Fulcrum's approach to drug discovery combines insights from patients with rare diseases with the most advanced tools to identify and develop therapeutics that will target the root cause. For several years, Fulcrum has been honored to work with the FSHD community in efforts to build awareness of the impact of FSHD on individuals and families. Fulcrum works in partnership with leaders from the patient advocacy and medical communities to highlight the impact of rare diseases and support continued research. You can connect with Fulcrum on LinkedIn and follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FulcrumTX. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to the show, FSHD Society Radio Show. You can email me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. Once again, thank you to our guest, Sam Ray, for talking about his FSHD story. 16 years old, and he is fighting the disease every day and doing a great job of it. And before we went to break, we actually talked a little bit there quickly, recapping about his driver's license hurdles that he has to overcome. And I'm serious. If you know a way we can help him, either email me, email him at the Arizona chapter. Let's get this done. Let's help him out. That would be a great team effort. Speaking of team effort, man, Giving Tuesday was awesome. We had 4 one-hour segments throughout the day, amazing interviews. Mark Stone launched it, and then we had amazing scientists on, Sharif. I'm not even going to attempt his last name. Just watch the episode. Listen to it again. He had the New York Times article about his delivery mechanism system to help get those treatments to our bodies and the muscle deeper in. And then in the next segment later in the day, Scott Harper talked about that exact science and how what he's doing in his lab is going to work with what Sharif has developed. And it was amazing to watch the two collaborate in their work right there on Giving Tuesday. It was awesome. We had Jacob Wise from Minnesota, Anna Gilmore from FSHD Society. Special thanks to all of them. Kylie Higgs, Heloise Hoffman, who we talked about in this episode again a little bit. Stephen Blyer, who I love talking to. Great musician, a teacher at Juilliard. And he has launched a new NYFOS, I believe, is the name of his new music label. So he talked about that. And then, of course, we jammed a little bit with Jamshid Arjamand, and then Renee Beaker and Molly White closed up the event. Not sure what the total numbers were. I think we were well past, 50-some thousand. We had a match of 200,000 we were trying to reach. So as I record this episode, it's only been about 4 days since we did Giving Tuesday. I'm recording this on the Friday after. I'm not sure what the grand totals were, but I'm sure you can find out all out at fshdsociety.org. And we couldn't have done it without our sponsors of PerkinElmer, Dyne Therapeutics, and Fulcrum Therapeutics. And Dyne, Molly White from Dyne came on, and that was a huge way to finish. And thank you to all of you that tuned in to the hours and tuned in to the times and donated and spread the word. Couldn't do it without you. I like the fact we can take this platform and use it to raise some money for the FSHD Society. That was always my goal when the idea started many years ago. And the fact that June Kinoshita was like, let's do it. And then Lee later jumped on too. And man, it has really become something. And I couldn't do it without you. I'm extremely grateful to be a part of this community of such amazing people. You want to get involved maybe more in the community. This is how you can do it, man. There's so many things going on in the FSHD Society. The FSHD U, the next one's coming up. We're going to talk about knee hypertension with, let's see here, I'm going to click on it. I don't want to get it wrong. With Bob Meyer. He is, he is a certified orthotist, and he's been on, I think, before. So they're going to talk about that. Check that out. That is on the 16th of December. In a couple days here from when this show is posted. Then we just talked about this, the Gen Z for FSHD, those that want to be a part of that, in that generation, great people. Take a look at it. It is December 19th, 4 p.m. Eastern. That's Zoom. Then there's a couple great events to finish up the month on the 28th. You have the Sharegiver Caregiver Hour and then the Virginia Monthly Meeting. Check that out as well. Let's see. Looks like Judy and Gary of the Virginia Chapter Directors are organizing that one, and it's virtual, so check it out. I always say I'm going to crash one of those virtual meetings, right? Just click in and be like, hey, what's going on? But I think that'd be weird. So, but unless you want me to come to one of your meetings, I totally will. I mean, it might be a lot of fun. If you want to get a hold of me, please do so. I'm here for you. FSHD Radio at FSHDSociety.org. this is the last episode of 2021. I hope it was a good year. When we turn the calendar over to 2022, I wish you the best. So from here, I'm not going to really talk to you guys until after the holiday season. So be well. Blessings to you, your family, and all those out there. Thank you so much for supporting this show. I think we're going on now as we turn the calendar over. I think it's going to be our like sixth or seventh year doing this. And all the episodes are out there. Share it with your friends. Spotify has them and so many other platforms. I only use Spotify, so I'm a little biased. But find pretty much this podcast anywhere you can find podcasts. It's out there. I've had great responses from people that aren't even part of this community. The gentleman I used to work with listens to the show, and hopefully he's gobbling up all those Giving Tuesday episodes that we released as well. Those are out there for your listening pleasure. But it's my pleasure to bring it to you. My pleasure to be a part of this community. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2022. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show, and we're going to close up with hearing a special thank you from our sponsor, PerkinElmer. Today's podcast is sponsored by PerkinElmer Genomics, a market leader in biochemical and genomic testing solutions. PerkinElmer Genomics understands that obtaining a confirmed genetic diagnosis for FSHD can be a difficult and frustrating experience for both patients and their families. That's why their laboratory prides itself on launching new and innovative technologies to help families find answers that they are looking for. Just over a year ago, PerkinElmer Genomics introduced the first new diagnostic approach to FSHD type 1 genetic testing in nearly three decades. This testing has drastically decreased the time to diagnose while increasing accessibility to patients. Knowing the underlying cause of FSHD can have important implications for the entire family, including help with future medical management decisions. Speak with your provider today and learn more about how you can get testing. Visit PerkinElmerGenomics.com to find out more about available testing options for FSHD and other related neuromuscular disorders that may help you and your family today. That's PerkinElmerGenomics.com.